All right, humans. Hello, humans. How are you? How are you? This is your substitute host, Illy Krug. Happy January 2 to you. No, it is not Mike McEntee. It is me, as you may have discerned by the difference in voice. I am the substitute host for Mike while he is on a well-deserved vacation until midweek next week, so you get to have me for several days in succession. I'm going to tell you right off the bat, I am not nearly as smooth as Mike. So you're going to hear some ahs and ums and some broken sentences simply because that's just the way I am. I'm not nearly as experienced as Mike, some of you, not all of you, but some of you will be familiar with me because I've been a host on Hidden Edges Radio every Sunday for the last year, a weekly show about surviving the human condition. So, and next week I get to have another show airing from 7:30 to 8 every morning called Illy 2.0. The last thing here to bear in mind is this, is that for those of you who have not heard me, you're wondering, her name is Ellen, or she goes by Illy. Ellen will be in the obituary, but my friends call me Illy. But you're hearing what sounds like a man's voice. And that's because I am one of the relatively few transgender radio hosts in the world. That would be me. If you're on Facebook Live right now, you can see me. Here I am, just looking right at you. If you really want to know, is she really female, you can go to the AM 950 website and take a look somewhere on one of the pages, or you can go to my website at illykrug.com. We have a lot to cover, I'm going to try and follow a little bit of Mike's format, but I'm throwing in a little bit of Illy Krug's format as well as we do this show. You can call in. I will take calls at certain parts of the show. The number is 952-946-6205. You can also email us at the station, or you can Facebook us since we're on Facebook Live. How do you like that phrase, Facebook us? On the line, though, because it is January 2, it is the beginning of the year, and it is a time for us to look forward to what things we have in store for us. And one of those things is going to be about Al Franken, but I first want to introduce our guest, Ellen Ratner, who is the bureau chief for Talk Media News, is with us. Ellen, are you there?
I am here. Thank you so much for the intro.
Oh, you're welcome. Ellen, I'm really happy to be working with you. And we've got a number of things on the plate, as it turns out, for us to deal with in the coming year. Let's talk about the very first thing, which turned out I thought would be an earthquake today, but really was a whimper. That is Al Franken's resignation from the Senate.
Right. So he resigned, and I think either later today or tomorrow, there's going to be two people that are going to be sworn in, both his replacement, who is your lieutenant governor, and also the new senator from Alabama, Doug Jones.
So it'll be a twofer in the Senate.
A twofer in the Senate, for sure.
Well, and I'll tell you, the reason I thought it would be an earthquake is that, you know, Al Franken is well-liked and well-loved here in Minnesota. And, you know, I've been spending the whole day trying to find his resignation letter to see what he had to say in the resignation letter. And right before we got on the show, I didn't see the letter. I saw an excerpt from it in the Star Tribune. The letter itself is only about 70 words long, and the Star Tribune itself described the letter as terse. That's the word that the Star Tribune used. Your thoughts about that? I know you haven't seen the letter yourself.
Well, my thoughts are that he explained himself and explained what he was doing when he made his speech on the floor of the Senate. And there really isn't much he can write about at this point other than what he said, which is already in the congressional record.
Well, and I hope that, I mean, he's talked about not allowing his voice is still going to be there, and he's still going to speak out on things such as climate change and other things. I just have a fear that, I mean, the impression that he is somebody brooding, and I'm sorry. There are all kinds of emotions I have about losing Al Franken, but we don't need to go in there. Let's go on to our next topic, and that is about what's going on with the news today that Orrin Hatch is resigning, or not, excuse me, not resigning, but not seeking re-election. And, you know, what does that portend for Mitt Romney and for the Republicans in general, particularly given Romney's opinion about Trump?
Well, the fact is that Romney most likely will run for that seat. He certainly has put out, you know, questions about it, and people have responded. My guess is that he would win that seat if he ran for it. He was very, very popular. He is a Mormon. And so we'll see what happens. And don't forget, he's the one that made the Salt Lake City Games go well. And he really rescued it. So he's very, very popular there. And I would not be surprised if he doesn't win.
All right. Well, then shifting yet again, but a little bit backwards, word today in the news is here locally that is Michelle Bachmann may also be running for a seat. That was a name that I was somewhat surprised to see resurface.
Well, you know, the fact is that once you, and I've been around Washington for a number of years, but once you get the politics in your veins, you do not get them out until you're in a nursing home. And she's not yet in a nursing home, and she still has the politics in your veins. And first of all, you have staff and you have your constituents who think you're the greatest thing in the world, and they keep telling you that, and then you begin to believe it. You know, as we say in Washington, you begin to believe your own press releases.
Well, we'll see. Stay tuned on that, because I'm sure you are thinking, as I'm thinking, the 2018 elections, the midterm elections, are going to be, I think, pretty raucous. And we'll see how that dictates a lot of political destinies.
Right. And we have, you know, a little over 10 months to go on those. It'll be in the 11th month, but not much into the 11th month. And so it's going to be really interesting because, of course, the Democratic National Committee and the Republican National Committee, and I get both of their emails, are already gearing up big time for the midterms.
Well, and listeners, you are listening to Ellen Krug as sitting in for Mike, who is on vacation. I've been interviewing here Ellen Ratner, and we're doing a little bit of review and procrastination about for the future that 2018 is going to go on. And here you go. See, I told you I wasn't as smooth as Mike. Ellen, let's shift gears a little bit, and let's talk about what's going on with President Trump's fixation as it relates to the Justice Department. Today, he went on record with a tweet calling it part of the deep state.
The problem is that, you know, and this is just my opinion, it is not fact, so it's an opinion, not a fact, but I honestly think that is what killed John F. Kennedy. I think that it was an inside job, and the problem is that you cannot go against the Washington establishment on an ongoing basis and live to tell about it. And I'm not saying that anybody's going to assassinate him or anything like that. I'm just telling you that there is, you want to call it a deep state, you want to call it the way things have been in Washington for many, many years, that is how it is done. And you don't go after your own Justice Department. You just don't do that. He went after the FBI when he was down at Quantico for the FBI graduation, and then he complimented them. Now, the FBI, as you know, is part of the Justice Department. So I honestly don't know what he was trying to accomplish by that, but it was not a smart move.
Well, all it does is delegitimize our Justice Department. And in turn, of course, he's also gone after the court system, and he's delegitimized the judicial system generally. I'm a lawyer by training and for a long time a civil trial lawyer. I greatly value our court system. I greatly value even the Justice Department, a little less so under Jeff Sessions, but nonetheless, there are a lot of career people in that Justice Department, and these are folks that are really protecting all of us in a variety of ways. So it's very troubling to me.
It's troubling to anybody who has lived in Washington. You don't go after the Justice Department. It is not a smart move, any more than you would go after the other branches of government, such as Congress or the Supreme Court. It's just not a very smart move, and I just don't, I mean, I am sure that just that General Kelly, who is the White House Chief of Staff, is just shaking his head at this point.
Well, he's got his head on a swivel, I'm sure, because of how much he has to shake it. Finally, Ellen, let's go international here for a second. Iran. What is going on in Iran? This is out
now,
of left
I'm one
field.
Of the few people you'll talk to who's actually been to Iran, although I was there before the current revolution in February 77. But I will tell you, I spent a long time in Iran. I went to Isfahan, I went to Shiraz, I went to Tehran, I went to everywhere. And Iran is a very multicultural and complex society, and anybody who thinks it isn't is wrong. And the problem is that people have seen Iran as sort of a unified country, which it is not. It never has been, never. You know, the reason that the Ayatollah came in is because people didn't like the Shah. Well, there's still some Shah people there. There's still some people that wanted the monarchy. And the problem is the CIA in the early 50s deposed who was, I believe, elected and put in the Shah of Iran. Well, you know, you don't do that kind of thing. And we are upset with the Russians for messing with our elections, supposedly. Well, we need to be upset with ourselves for messing with other people's elections as well. And that's what we did. And we're paying the price for it.
Well, I know, but we're now trying to interfere further in that election. I mean, or what's going on in Iran, because we have the, you know, we have the president tweeting about that. And so, well, Ellen, it's been great talking to you. I've really appreciated it.
Thank you, and I hopefully I'll get to talk to you again this week.
Yeah, hopefully. We'll take care and have a good rest of Tuesday. Thanks so very much.
Thank you so much.
This is Ellen Krug subbing for Mike. When we come back, we'll talk more about today's events and other things going on in the world. Thank you.
Stages Theater Company is dedicated to creating a space where diverse opinions, courageous dialogue, and community engagement is not only valued, but vital to our shared artistic and educational success. Stages Theater Company creates a welcoming home for all. For over 30 years, Stages has supported quality theater programming for children. Stages gives opportunities for youth to be on stage, backstage, in the audience, and in the classroom. Whether you come to see a show, enroll a young person in a workshop, or benefit from their outreach programs in the community, Stages brings art to life. Learn about Stages Theater by going to stagestheater.org and become part of the magic of live theater by taking your family to an amazing show or enrolling someone you love in an education program. Stages Theater Company operates out of the Hopkins Center for the Arts, located in Main Street in the heart of downtown Hopkins. For more information on Stages Theater, go to stagestheater.org. That's stagestheater.org.
Hi, friends. I've been talking to you about Minnesota's first green cemetery, Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens. It's an entirely new way of looking at our last earthly step. Burials are designed to have as little impact on the environment as possible. For many of us, a continuation of the commitment we made during our lifetimes. Let me suggest you go to the website, mngreengraves.com. Explore what it is. Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens. It's a lovely place, a peaceful place. Minnesota's first green cemetery.
Mashad Cooley Erickson, a mechanical and electrical consulting engineering firm in Minneapolis, supports inclusivity by designing spaces for all user groups, honoring inclusivity and respect. These spaces include gender-neutral family restrooms and nursing mothers' rooms. For example, Mashad Cooley Erickson has designed lactation rooms for traveling mothers at the MSP International Airport. Designing these spaces has changed the expectations of similar facilities in airports around the country. Mashad Cooley Erickson designed safe and comfortable environments for occupants who are their number one priority.
One Voice Mixed Chorus, Minnesota's LGBTA chorus, returns to the Ordway Concert Hall for Sanctuary, an unforgettable evening of choral music celebrating the music of immigrants who make Minnesota home, including Scandinavian, German, Irish, Mexican, Hmong, and Somali. One Voice will also perform You Will Be Found for Broadway's Dear Evan Hansen and I Come From Good People. That's at the Ordway Concert Hall Friday, January 19th and Sunday, January 21st. Call 651-224-4222 or check out onevoicemn.org for tickets today.
And we're back. This is your substitute host, Ellen Krug, sitting in for Mike, who is on vacation. And again, because we're just doing this for the first time, and so for regular guests of Mike, you're getting used to the fact that you have a woman with a female name. Thank you, but sounds like a man. It's because I'm transgender. So there you go. Before we broke, we were talking to Ellen Ratner in part about about the Franken resignation and soon Tina Smith to be our senator. And in preparation for today's show, what I wanted to do was to at least get some idea of what the landscape is like as it relates to women in politics and women politicians. So with Tina Smith's taking the oath tomorrow to become Minnesota senator, that will give Minnesota two female senators along with Amy Klobuchar. And so I wondered how many states have two female senators. And as it turns out of 50 states, there are three current, soon to be four, three current states with two female senators, California, Washington, and New Hampshire. And for our history buffs, for those who have any interest about the first female senator who was ever elected, that would be Margaret Chase Smith in 1948. She was from Maine. She had been appointed to fill the seat of her late husband, who had been a senator. And then she ran for election on her own and was elected. But you know what? It wasn't until 1978 that the first woman was actually elected outright without any prior connection to a senatorial seat, and that was Nancy Kassenbaum from Kansas. 1978, that's only 40 years ago. Think about that. And as it turns out, you know, how many years we've been in, a country, there have only been 50 women who have ever served, not necessarily elected, only 50 women who have ever served in the Senate. So I found that of great interest. Hopefully you did too. Now, in addition to that, as it relates to what's going on today in politics about women getting to elected office, there's a trend. There's no question about it. And by the way, I am willing to take calls. Our number is 952-946-6205. An Associated Press story today by Christine Cassidy talks about how there are more women seeking elected office. And there's an organization called Emily's List that's its whole purpose is to promote women, to recruit them and promote them into elected office. Before 2016, there had been a total of 960 women who had ever contacted Emily's List about becoming involved in politics, becoming involved in running for elected office. Since a year ago, a little bit more than a year ago, 14 months ago, since the election of 2016, 23,000 women have contacted Emily's List for purposes of inquiring about and expressing strong interest in running for elected office. Think about that. Right now, women only represent one-fifth of the elected officials, elected representatives in Congress. There are only six women governors at present. There are only 20% of the mayors in the United States are women, and only 25% of state legislators are women. Now, part of this certainly has to do with the current political climate. Certainly about, I would venture to guess, the political climate as it relates to how women have been treated, were treated in the political, in the presidential election, how we've seen them come about now. Certainly the Me Too, hashtag Me Too movement has had a role in how to do this. And even the women's marches have motivated women to get more involved. And, you know, something near and dear to my heart, there were a number of transgender women who were elected to office in the elections that just occurred in November. So the last time there was a swelling like this of interest by women in the political landscape, the last time was also related to how women were marginalized in a very public way. And that goes back to 1992, when Anita Hill was roasted, I think that would be a mild phrase for it, by a Senate, the Senate Judiciary Committee, when she testified on Clarence Thomas's credentials and competency to become a Supreme Court justice. Some of you may remember the public offending that took place with Anita Hill on TV before all of America. And, you know, it was exceedingly interesting because after that, there were women who became involved. There were women who said, I'm not going to take this anymore publicly. I'm not going to allow women to be put in a position where their word is not valued. I mean, remember, Anita Hill was essentially called a liar for her claims about how Clarence Thomas made sexually inappropriate statements and suggestive comments to her and other women in her presence. That motivated women in 1992 to become far more active, i23,000 contacting and being involved with Emily's List. That suggests to me that there are a lot of people, a lot of women who are feeling the motivation to become active in politics because people want to have a say now. Women want to control their destinies. They want to control the way it is in America. And for me, what I think is the most ironic twist, right now we have a number of male politicians stepping down due to claims of sexual harassment. Not only allegations, but some admitted sexual harassment. And the interesting thing is those men stepping down are going to have women vying for their seats. And in 2018, there will be 36 governor seats up for election. 36. And right now, a total of 77 women have expressed interest in running for those 36 seats. Wow. 77 women running for 36 governor seats. Can we imagine how that's going to change right now? I mean, there are only six governorships that are held by women at the present time. What does 2018 portend for all of us and for our country as it relates to how the landscape may change with women participating far more vigorously in the political process? You're listening to me, Ellie Krug. I'm sitting in for Mike, who is Mike McIntyre, who is on vacation. And I'll be here for you for the entire week as it goes. Hopefully you'll continue to tune in. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about how the New Year's brings everyone to have New Year's resolutions, and of course causes many of us to break those resolutions fairly quickly. I'll have with me Dr. Kurt Nelson, a behavioral psychologist, to talk about New Year's resolutions. Thanks so very much. You've been listening to Ellie Krug. I'll be back in a second.
Chunk Gaming Wisconsin, wherever you are and however you like it. We're just the place you're looking for. Six unique, fun, exciting, winning destinations located throughout central Wisconsin. Make your rounds to Wittenberg, Nakusa, Black River Falls, Toma, Madison, or Wisconsin Dells for the hottest slots, most exciting games, award-winning guest service, delicious food and spirits, lodging, and live entertainment. Join the Ho-Chunk Gaming Rewards Club for free. And with a single card, you can earn valuable points no matter which of the six locations you choose to play. That means more exclusive offers, giveaways, cash back, discounts, and much more. Visit us online to see all we have to offer and find the fun times nearest you at HoChunkGaming.com. So wherever you are and however you like it, we're just the place you're looking for. Ho-Chunk Gaming Wisconsin, Wittenberg, Nakusa, Black River Falls, Toma, Madison, and Wisconsin Dells. Must be 21 or over to play.
Hey, Minnesota, Norman Goldman here. The furniture business is one of those industries that's full of fake sales and false discounts. This is the age of the hashtag illegitimate fake president, and haven't you been lied to enough? That's why you need to check out Habitation Furnishing and Design. Habitation offers some of the coolest furniture in Minneapolis at fair prices every day. No fake sales, no phony discounts, just honest, intriguing, and really unique furniture. Check out Habitation on Excelsior Boulevard in St. Louis Park, or visit HabitationDesign.com.
This is Kevin Ross from Hoppy Trolley, and you're going to absolutely love our new heated and air-conditioned electric bus. We completely restored 1968 West Coaster to its original condition. It's a lightweight electric vehicle so you can taste with no waste. Let us drive you in comfortable style while you have fun tasting beer and learning about the area's best craft breweries and interesting neighborhoods, all without impacting the environment. Book now at 612-607-3681 or online at hoppytrolley.com.
I'm a retired school psychologist, and helping people was my thing. After my stroke, when Meals on Wheels started, I was on the other end of the stick, so to speak. My name is Julius Gaines, creative writer, poet, photographer.
One in six seniors faces the threat of hunger, and millions more live in isolation. Drop off a hot meal and say a quick hello. Volunteer for Meals on Wheels by donating your lunch break at AmericaLet'sDoLunch.org. This message brought to you by Meals on Wheels America and the Ad Council.
The paper said 75. There were no survivors.
And we're back. Hello, everyone. This is Ellie Krug sitting in for Mike. We've been talking about this is the new year. It's January 2, soon to be January 3. It, of course, is the time for New Year's resolutions. It's the time for when many of us, that includes yours truly here, make these plans and, you know, these admonishments to ourselves that we're either going to stop doing something or we're going to start something new. Many of us struggle with keeping these resolutions solid. And so, you know, we're human. There's no question about it. And humans aren't good with sticking to things. Not, you know, not very much, okay? And we're not good with stress. And because we're not good with stress, we do things that cause us to undermine our New Year's resolutions. So to help us understand why New Year's resolutions don't work, and to get some tips maybe for how to stay on track with your resolutions, I have Dr. Kurt Nelson on the telephone. Dr. Nelson is the founder and president of the Lantern Group, a global communications and behavioral design agency with offices in Minneapolis and Boulder. For over 20 years, his research and work has helped focused on understanding how people make purposeful change and helping them to achieve their goals. And regular listeners to Ellie Krug will recognize the name for Dr. Kurt because he's been on Hidden Edges Radio a couple of times. Dr. Kurt, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well, Ellie. Thank you. What a great to be here.
Well, Happy New Year's to you.
Happy New Year's. So what resolutions did you make?
I happen to be sober, and I've been sober for 2.5 years, and my New Year's resolution was to continue to be sober. But frankly, that's a resolution I just have to make every day. So every day is different. So Dr. Kurt, tell us, first of all, why do we make New Year's resolutions?
resolutions, anytime people change, we tend to look for those moments in our lives that have some significance. And particularly if there's a new beginning, various different things. So we often make changes in our lives around birthdays, anniversaries, various different things. Obviously, New Year's, starting off that new year, we tend to think about it as a way to look past what we have been and into the future about what we can be. And so that's, I think, one of those main reasons. Plus, it's just the thing to do as you're toasting to the new year coming in. Everybody talks about it. It's kind of expected.
Well, and I'll tell you, on New Year's Eve, I was cleaning my condo a deep clean for the first time. And so that was one of my resolutions is, and that's the same thing. You want out with the old and in with the new, right?
Exactly. In with the new. It's a nice trigger. There are things when people change, one of the things that lets them change easier is when there are triggers that kind of force their hand into things or get them thinking in a certain way. New Year's is obviously one of those triggers.
Well, and callers, Dr. Kurt will take he'll take questions. And so if you want to call in, its number is 952-946-6205. So Dr. Kurt, all right, we know you've explained why we make those resolutions. All right, how can we keep them? Because, how many people go and say, I'm going to go work out. They go to the gym once, maybe, and then, not until they've already signed up for a whole year's worth of gym.
Well, the research that I've seen is roughly about 9% of people are actually continuing on their New Year's resolutions by January 15th. So not even 2 weeks.
Oh my God, only 9%.
9%. That was research done at the University of Scranton. I think that can be taken various different ways, but to keep your resolutions, I think, which is one of the key things here, is thinking through what it takes for us to change. And one of those things that we can do is obviously think about the social environment that we're in and making resolutions, trying to do any kind of change. If you have a social support network that is there for you, I always talk about, having kind of three different ways around that. There's a coach somebody who's been there can help you understand what's going to happen. There can be the referee, who is the person who's holding you accountable, making sure that you do what you say you're going to do. And then there's
that. That sounds like a spouse.
I will take that, but I have actually, spouses are not always the best for that. So sometimes you need an outside perspective on that. You don't want to have that nagging spouse being the one who is always overriding you. And then the last piece on that social piece is that cheerleader kind of thing, that person who's there for that moral support. That one, the spouse, is usually better at in that situation. So,
all right. But how do we, okay, I love the labels, but how do we, actuate all of that stuff? I mean, you've got people listening right now who did make, made their vows on New Year's Eve and said, last cigarette I'm ever going to smoke, or maybe the last drink I'm ever going to have, or, more likely the last, sugar donut I'm going to have, and for those folks, how do we, how do we get down on the practical?
Yeah. So one of the things beyond just asking people to be there and support and telling them what you're trying to do, not so much the goal, but what are the habits or behaviors that you're trying to do, right? So getting those people, specifically asking for that support and then working with them on what that is. The other way, another thing that we can do is do what we call if-then commitments or if-then kind of resolutions in and of themselves. And that gets into those spots where if you are going to stop smoking or stop drinking or stop having that sugary donut, there will be situations that you will be placed in where that temptation is going to be huge to have that smoke or that drink or that donut. And you need to be able to have a easy way out. And often we can do that with if-then commitment. So if I am going to be in X situation, then I will respond in this way. And that would be the positive resolution or the positive behavior that you're wanting. And so those can be very powerful. And I would recommend for everybody, if you're trying to change, write those down. Make sure that they come to mind quickly, because the fact of the matter is that we're pretty lazy. Our brain is pretty lazy when it comes to these things, and we usually give in to temptation unless there's an easy way out, and that easy way can be that if-then commitment.
So can you give us a concrete example of if-then?
Yes. So take, for instance, if you were trying to stop drinking. In that case, but you knew that, hey, there are these social environments that I'm going to have to be in. I have a family, and that family, we have family dinners, and we know that there's going to be wine served with that dinner. And
a bunch of other drinkers in the family, right? Yes,
exactly. So in those instances, you have to make that commitment in advance. And so when somebody comes up and says, and you know that you're going to have that uncle or that person who is insistent, no, just have one. And so then you make that commitment there that you either are going to say, no, I'm going to be having this other drink. I'm going to be drinking grape juice or whatever it would be that time. Or even people can be sneaky about it, and they can say, they'll take that glass of wine, and they'll dump it out, and they'll replace it with the grape juice that they brought along in their own thing. So having those backup plans that are easy in those instances, Those are some of the ways that you can do it. I've talked with people who have done things, where they have changed the environment that they are in, so that drink or that more likely that donut isn't there, so that you again aren't even tempted to have that donut when you wake up in the morning. You just have it gone from your pantry.
Well, and this is Ellie Krug. We've been speaking with Dr. Kurt Nelson about New Year's resolutions and how to hold true to them. And Dr. Kurt, can you share with us maybe in your experience, and I know that you're not a clinical psychologist, but you're a behavioral psychologist. And can you give us an example of maybe, what is the largest hurdle you've ever seen somebody overcome as they were trying to stay true to a resolution, but, then had this huge barrier to overcome to do it?
Oh, very good question. There have been a number of people that I have interviewed in regards to how they have changed. One that comes to mind was a gentleman who was both an alcoholic and a sex addict, and obviously had a lot of other issues that was going on in his life. But he was an executive in an organization, well-liked and respected. He's a great guy. I've known him for years. But he had these demons. And so, one of the big things that he talked about was that he would go on business trips, and back before the internet and various different things, he would get into a hotel. And he would look in the yellow pages for, sexual services and various different things. And what he did, which I commend greatly, is before, once he realized that this was not a thing and that yellow pages was a temptation, when he checked into a hotel, he would have either prior to checking in or at check-in, he would have them go up and remove any of that type of yellow pages from the room. And just would not have that in there. And so those were some of the things that he did in order to overcome some of those changes that he was dealing with.
All right. And of course, in our internet age, temptation is so much easier, whether it relates to alcohol or pornography or sexual things of that nature. And it is also, the internet is a place where people run to just simply escape. And when
yes.
and sometimes that escaping does fill the time, and it allows us to be better with our demons, the demons that we've resolved for a New Year's to get rid of. But sometimes that escaping isn't very healthy.
No. And as you said, the internet is a click away. And so the easy part of that makes it that much more tempting. You don't have to jump through big hurdles to get to whatever it is that that demon, if you're trying to stop that. And so with those instances, again, you have to think about, where are you placing yourself? What's the environment that you're placing yourself in? And are there things that you can do, either through apps that you add on to your phone or to your computer, that that limit or restrict your access to things, or things that remind you about not doing things that you want to do, various different things along those lines.
Right. And you can find those apps. There are many of them. I heard recently about an app that reminds you that you're going to die five times a day.
I don't know if I'd be positive on that one, but that's,
it
worked for some people.
But it was always accompanied by some kind of mindfulness quote. You know, I think the idea behind that app was that, you know, humans would be more willing to pay attention to what's going on in the world.
Take that bigger picture.
Dr. Kurt, it's been really great to have you on the show again. Thanks so very much for helping us to be better with our New Year's resolutions. And I wish you a happy New Year, and I wish you good luck with it, whatever your resolutions have been.
All right. Thank you, Ellie, and it's been a pleasure.
All right. Take care. We've been speaking with Dr. Kurt Nelson of the Lantern Group, who's been helping us keep our New Year's resolutions. When I come back, we'll talk a little bit more about some other year-end things and about an inspirational story that I found. Thanks so very much.
Congratulations, you survived the holidays. Now what about cleaning up that holiday mess? Fortunately, right now is the best time of the year to call Zero Res and let their professionals do their empowered water thing. Why? Because Zero Res is having a holiday hangover sale. This month you can get 3-room Zero Res clean starting at only $119. Plus this month you can still get a great deal when you get your air duct Zero Res clean. Call 952-ZERO-RES or visit ZeroResMN.com. Zero Res, spell it backward or forward, it spells the same.
Hello, this is Ellen Krug with Hidden Edges Radio on Sundays from 1 to 2 p.m. Join me this Sunday for an interview with Dale Grunke, the mayor of Delano, Minnesota, who will talk about how the city has come together following a racial hatred incident that involved swastikas and horrible names. Learn how Delano didn't run from the incident and instead leaned in to make the community more inclusive. Hidden Edges Radio, challenging, passionate, perspective-changing. On AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Enjoy a delicious home-cooked breakfast or lunch away from the kitchen at Milda's Cafe, now open 7 days a week. Milda's Cafe has been cooking up family favorites since 1964. Grab a coffee and sit down for a delicious Philly scramble, house-made rolls, or Denver omelet. Stop in for lunch where you'll find authentic Finnish pasties every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Open weekdays 6 to 3, weekends 8 to 2. Milda's Cafe on Glenwood Avenue, 4 blocks east of Penn.
Turn to Auto Technical with your vehicle donation. We have families waiting for a car. You know, over 85% of unemployed are successful in finding and keeping a job if they have dependable transportation. A car plus a job equals a life changed. 612-919-5526. We have families waiting for a car. 919-5526 or autotech.org.
Hi, Matt McNeil here. Toyota-thon is on. Head over to Rudy Luther Toyota as they celebrate their 40th year and check out the great deals. They're offering rebates on the all-new redesigned 2018 Camry. Check out the rebates on the RAV4. And did you know that both the Camry and the RAV4 have a hybrid version? Very impressive. Rudy Luther Toyota is the largest Toyota certified pre-owned dealer in the state. For all the Toyota-thon specials, head to RudyLutherToyota.com or stop in today for Toyota-thon at Rudy Luther Toyota, 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
And we're back. Hello, hello. This is substitute host Ellie Krug sitting in for Mike, who is on vacation for the next week. And we've been speaking with a number of people about 2018 as the start of many things. And one of those things it's a start of is California legalizing marijuana purchases for recreational use. And I needed to carry this story and pick it up and just talk about it very briefly is because It is a, you know, it's a highlight. That's a, I'm using a pun here, a highlight of a major development in 2018, because that development is very significant as it relates to our country. For the record, California has 39 million people. It represents approximately 12% of the U.S. population. It joins, California joins five other states that have legalized marijuana, and those states would be Colorado, Washington, Oregon, Alaska, and Nevada. On July 1st, coming up this year, Massachusetts will make the sale of marijuana legal. Maine, which would be now then state number 8, has legislation that's passed to allow for the sale of marijuana, but they haven't set a date for when that will occur. So they are predicting that California alone, within a couple of years, will account for $7 billion worth of sales in marijuana. That compares to, for those five states right now that are selling, that have been selling marijuana, and Colorado's been doing it since 2012, those five states alone together account for about $6 billion worth of sales in 2017. So they predict that California, in and of itself, is going to double that. And, you know, think about how that's going to affect California as well as our country. Now, we have an attorney general who is not in favor of legalized marijuana, but I think that that horse is out of the barn at this point. California, by the way, is going to impose a 45% tax on the sale of marijuana. And for those of you who are wondering how it's going to go, you know, we do have Colorado to look at in terms of experience. They have 5 years worth of a track record. Again, marijuana was legalized in Colorado in 2012. And recent surveys show that youth are not using marijuana more than when they were using it in 2012. In fact, the surveys are saying that youth are using it less. There have been fewer arrests and charges for underage marijuana users. And the thing that I found most interesting was a story that I saw today by Christopher Ingraham in the Washington Post, who reports that the American Journal of Public Health found that there was a reversal, that was a lowering of opiate overdose deaths in Colorado by 6%. That is a 6% decrease in opioid-related deaths within two years after Colorado legalized marijuana. Why is that? I mean, they're still trying to figure that out, but some of the theories are that both opioids and medical marijuana were used to treat chronic pain. And the idea is that once marijuana became recreational, once recreational use was allowed in Colorado, that meant more people had a choice about what type of pain relief to have for chronic pain, and that many patients are choosing marijuana over opioids. And so if that's the case, that would certainly seem to correspond with a reduction in opioid overdose deaths and overdoses in general. So maybe a silver lining as it relates to marijuana usage, legal marijuana usage, you know? Will this ever happen in Minnesota? I think the answer would be no, in capital letters. Minnesota might be the 48th state to allow legalized marijuana based on the way things are presently, but who knows? Maybe things will change. Maybe there'll be more of those women to elected office. They'll have a say about that. Who knows? We will see. The last story, and those familiar, is about humans. And those familiar with my show on human on Hidden Edges Radio know that my show highlights our common survival and struggle to survive the human condition. And here is a story not with a happy ending, but certainly one that demonstrates the power of the human spirit. It came across the press today. I did see an earlier story about it a day or so ago about a woman named Heather Mosier, who was 31 years old, who suffered from breast cancer. She died over the Christmas holiday. She and her fiancé, David Mosier, had become engaged actually on the day that Heather got news of her breast cancer diagnosis. David is reported to have said, well, he had found out about the diagnosis before he popped the question. And when he heard about the diagnosis, he thought that it made it all the more necessary and urgent that he ask Heather to marry him. And some of you may have seen the Facebook picture, or the picture first appeared in Facebook and then appeared in national media, about Heather dressed in a wedding gown, sitting on a hospital bed with a ventilator. So she was attached to a ventilator with her arms raised up in the victory pose after the vows had been exchanged. Those vows were exchanged on December 22nd. A picture posted after that shows her pushing a wedding cake into David's mouth. You know, that's the old traditional wedding picture bride and grooms always share when they cut the cake. And 18 hours after that, after the vows were exchanged, Heather died. And she died on what was to be their wedding day. And, of course, that's very symbolic in and of itself. Why do I share this story? Well, because, obviously, it tells us something about the human spirit. You know, the spirit is pretty strong. It is something that keeps most of us alive in our times of desperation or loneliness, or our times of fighting those demons that Dr. Kurt spoke about earlier today. You know, we all have demons. We all have challenges. But the human spirit is filled with grit and resiliency, and even in the face of death, allowing somebody to do the victory pose with the hands raised, saying, I'm here, I'm facing you down, and I'm not giving up. It's been a pleasure to be here and to host for Mike today. I've really enjoyed talking with our guests and being able to be in a place where I occupy your brain waves for a few minutes. You've been listening to me, Ellie Krug, substitute host for Mike, who is on vacation. I'll be back tomorrow. I want to give a big shout out and thanks to our producer, Brett Johnson. Thank you, Brett. You rock. Thank you. Please, I'll be here all week. If you feel the need to call in, if you like what you hear, email me at elliekrug.com and let me know. Thanks so very much.